To begin our theme of devotee association, the utmost necessity, and the relinquishing of materialistic association, the utmost necessity, we'll start with a verse that was often a keynote signature verse that Srila Prabhupada would speak on, clarifying what is human life, what is real human civilization, and what is the misuse of human life and the false presentation of human civilization. So we'll turn to the fifth canto, chapter 5, Lord Rishabhdev's teachings, text 1, translation. Lord Rishabhdev told his sons, "My dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever." Purport. In this verse, Lord Rishabhdev tells his sons about the importance of human life. The word dehabhak refers to anyone who accepts a material body. But the living entity who is awarded the human form must act differently from animals. Animals like dogs and hogs enjoy sense gratification by eating stool. After undergoing severe hardships all day, human beings are trying to enjoy themselves at night by eating, drinking, having sex, and sleeping. At the same time, they have to properly defend themselves. However, this is not human civilization. Human life means voluntarily practicing suffering for the advancement of spiritual life. There is, of course, suffering in the lives of animals and plants, which are suffering due to their past misdeeds. However, human beings should voluntarily accept suffering in the form of austerities and penances in order to attain the divine life. After attaining the divine life, one can enjoy happiness eternally. After all, every living entity is trying to enjoy happiness, but as long as one is encaged in the material body, he has to suffer different kinds of misery. A higher sense is present in the human form. We should act according to superior advice in order to attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead. It is significant in this verse that the government and the natural guardian, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. Devoid of Krishna consciousness, every living being suffers in this cycle of birth and death perpetually. To relieve them from this bondage and enable them to become blissful and happy, Bhakti Yoga should be taught. A foolish civilization neglects to teach people how to rise to the platform of Bhakti Yoga. Without Krishna consciousness, a person is no better than a hog or dog. The instructions of Vrishabhdev are very essential at the present moment. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification, and there's no sublime aim in life. A man travels to earn his livelihood, leaving home early in the morning, catching a local train, and being packed in a compartment. He has to stand for an hour or two in order to reach his place of business. Then again, he takes a bus to get to the office. At the office, he works hard from 9 to 5. Well, not anymore. It's longer. Then he takes 2 or 3 hours to return home. After eating, he has sex and goes to sleep. For all this hardship, his only happiness is a little sex. Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukhamiducham. Rishabhdev clearly states that human life is not meant for this kind of existence, which is enjoyed even by dogs and hogs. Indeed, dogs and hogs do not have to work so hard for sex. A human being should try to live in a different way and should not try to imitate dogs and hogs. The alternative is mentioned. Human life is meant for tapasya, austerity, and penance. By tapasya, one can get out of the material clutches. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, devotional service, his happiness is guaranteed eternally. By taking to bhakti yoga, devotional service, one's existence is purified. The living entity is seeking happiness, life after life, but he can make a solution to all his problems simply by practicing bhakti yoga. Then he immediately becomes eligible to return home back to Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoviti tatvata chakta deham punarjanma naiti mam eti sorjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in the material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Om Gana Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadara Sivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Just one minor point. Is it possible if the men have to exit in and out during class or come in late, they can use that door? Is it possible or no? Okay. Last year we spoke about happiness, and we can never get to the end of that topic because it's what everyone wants. Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam freely and easily admit that happiness is what the living entity is all about. It's not a grudging admission. It's not some secret. Our original nature is happiness. As the Vedic texts say, Anandamayo Vyasat, the natural nature. the living entity is happiness. So what's happened? Birth after birth, we are trying for happiness. Just look at your endeavors in your life that you can remember. The part of life that you can remember. I don't know how far back you can go in your memories. But you're always trying to amuse yourself and be happy. And you have this vision in your mind's eye that if I do such and such now, in the future I'll be happy. So the basic program in material existence is how to be happy now and how to be happy in the future. That's the basic program. Okay. We discussed that our natural nature is happiness. But what's happening in material existence? Due to the bewilderment caused by the material energy, we don't know what real happiness is. We've been hit on the head and we have amnesia. We've lost our proper understanding of what is happiness. We become deranged. And therefore, we're struggling so hard, as you heard in the purport, to get something which is actually not happiness. So what Lord Rishabhdev is advising his sons is that why struggle for something that is an illusion? Why work so hard for something that doesn't exist? If you're going to struggle, if you're going to work hard, why not do that for real happiness? Brahmasokyam tvanantam. That happiness of the spiritual experience, which is unlimited. Now, underneath this issue of happiness is a controversy. It's actually not a controversy, but we have made it such. Do we or do we not accept that material existence is a diseased form of life? Now, according to so-called contemporary spirituality, we should look away from the thousands of years of tradition given to us by the wisdom texts, the world's wisdom texts of the past. Whatever wisdom texts may be, Bhagavad Gita, the Bible, the Quran, the Torah, whatever. We can take some inspiration, a little bit of inspiration from that, but in these times we're more advanced. And so we need to fashion a form of spirituality that is more life-affirming. You know what that means. That means body-affirming. And body, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, means the senses. Indriyani pranayama. So, we are exhorted by such concoctions that you shouldn't subscribe to philosophy that is body-negative. Life negating. You should hanker for that spirituality that sees everything as spiritual and sees everything as a conduit for enlightenment, however way you think it's going to happen. The thing is not to submit to any shastra or any spiritual teacher. These days, what we are all for is the democratization of spirituality. Just like in an election, you know, one person, one vote. Similarly, in spiritual life, you know, it's how you feel, how you vote. You know, just like on, you know, Facebook, thumbs up or thumbs down. So it's up to you. In this day and age, it's every individual's opinion that is important, and every individual can determine the path of spiritual development. So, you don't want any form of ancient spirituality that tries to distinguish between matter and spirit and tries to teach you to discriminate between material activities and spiritual activities. when all you have to do is just wave a magic wand and everything becomes spiritual in its own way. So not only do you want to desist from labeling some activities as material and spiritual, but you also want to strive for self-authorization. What does self-authorization mean? That it's not the shastra, it's not the spiritual teacher, it's not the guru who decides anything. Self-authorization means you are it. You make the decisions in a spiritual democracy. You, through your daily experience, gradually sort out what is spiritual. And you gradually realize that actually you don't have to restrict yourself from so many things, because actually so many things can lead to spirituality. If you yourself see it in that way. Now, of course, in more progressive persons, naturally they'll be vegetarians. More progressive persons will naturally not gamble. And even more progressive persons will not take any intoxicants other than wine at dinner time. And sometimes some marijuana that has been grown organically with pesticides. As long as these things are not indulged in an addictive way or an extreme way, everything can contribute to that overall spiritual experience. Of course, those who are most progressive, they will shun even the softer pleasure drugs. But there's one thing that must be a part of every bona fide spiritual endeavor. And here is where the big disagreement with the shastras and teachers of the past. These days, the important thing is not marriage. Marriage is outdated, as you know. The main thing, what is the terminology? Let me get it right now. A committed sexual relationship. That distinguishes the gold from the tin. When there's commitment. Just an agreement between two persons that they will, for some time at least, simply indulge in one another and no one else. That is contemporary spirituality. There's no need of spiritual authority. There's no need of distinguishing between material and spiritual activities. There's no need of any kind of vows, to speak of marriage. Just a verbal, voluntary commitment that as long as things seem to be all right, we'll stay together. And we'll simply indulge in one another. And this is considered a high state of existence. So, sometimes even our own devotees consciously or unconsciously become affected by this virus because it's everywhere. Okay, now that you become spiritual, that's great. You should be open to everything. That's what spiritual means. Be open to everything and don't make judgments. Who knows? Any kind of experience could be a gateway to enlightenment. Why restrict yourself? It's all part of a learning experience anyway. And gradually, hopefully one day you'll find out what the lesson is to be learned. But anyway, it's a learning experience. Particularly between two persons in a committed relationship. They are like two embodied mysteries seeking to discover one another. Who knows what will be encountered on that path of discovery? But that's all part of life. Just trying to grasp and grope and try to, in some way, discern the spiritual spark in one another. So, this is so-called contemporary spirituality in a nutshell. Perhaps some of you who have attended a certain college in West Auckland, perhaps you have heard of such a concept. And then you have the Hare Krishnas, the happy Haris. Oh, they just stick to this antiquated path. I mean, they're happy and their food is good. Their lifestyle of pain, abnegation, denial. Who can live like that? It'll never be popular. Who in their right mind would turn down the open-endedness of contemporary spirituality to confine themselves to ancient shastras, confine themselves to spiritual autocrats, when you are the one to decide everything? Be self-authorized! So, underneath this controversy is the question whether this life as lived a material existence is normal or whether it's a diseased existence. If you can penetrate to that point, you'll understand the whole controversy. As Lord Rishabhdev says, why are you struggling so hard, working so hard to enjoy a disease? Why not become cured and then taste real happiness? And the other side says, no, everything is beautiful its own way. Just be happy in this situation now. Just go with the flow. Have peak experiences. That's what life is all about. But if you can grasp this point about material existence being a disease state, you save yourself so much trouble and concoction. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? We discussed last year, but it's always worth repeating. Yehi sam sparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. Krishna is putting it all out in the open. That's the glory of Bhagavad Gita. All the issues are right there on the table. That's why, as I always say, when devotees want to be in Maya, the first book they start reading is Bhagavad Gita. Because it's just too clear. Too definitive. So you just keep it on the bookshelf in your house. Offer respects to it from a healthy distance. So Krishna is saying, there's something called samsparshaja bhoga. Enjoyment based on sense perception. Particularly touch. The tactile sense, the skin stuff, in every way. When we think how much of our happiness is dependent on the skin, when I say skin, it means The stuff that covers your bones, it means your gums, it means your tongue, it means anything corporal. It's amazing how much our concept of happiness is bound up with sense of touch. You want your body to feel good. And actually, the Shastra points out that's a hopeless mission. The more you become bound to so-called bodily happiness, you must be bound to bodily distress. And actually, the so-called bodily happiness is not happiness. But because we don't know anything better, we cling so tightly to it. We've been covered by the darkness of ignorance, avidya. And particularly this samsparshaja bhoga. Think of it scientifically. Use your scientific intelligence. Analyze your expectations of happiness and see how much is based on the skin. Even how your gums are feeling, your tongue, all the kinds of membranes that make up your body. And then if you want to be more subtle, the mind is also a body. And so you want your mind. So some samsparshaja bhoga can be extended to refer to the mind. The mind touches, the mind feels. So you want your mind to have good stimulations. So combine that with how you want your physical body to feel, and you have conditioned life. Now we can take it straight from Krishna and save ourselves so much trouble. Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. Krishna says that samsparshaja bhoga, that happiness based on sense perception, particularly the sense of touch, actually is a source of misery. Now you have to convince yourself how that is so. And that takes some concentration, some deliberation. If you can't get past this point, you'll have a difficult time in spiritual life. Because inadvertently, sooner or later, you're going to be overwhelmed by the contemporary spirituality, so-called. If you can't understand dukkha yonaivate, Krishna is speaking directly. He's telling you like it is. It's a source of misery. Then you fight back naturally. No, how can that be so? I got skin that wants to feel good. I've got a tongue that wants to feel good. My gums want to feel good. All my membranes want to feel good. How can Krishna be saying it's a source of misery? There must be something else going on. And there is. Aryantavanta Konteya Nateshu Ramate Buddha. Krishna says, someone who is Buddha wise doesn't mean simply someone who sits in a lotus position. Buddha means wise. Wise in understanding this point. They never seek to enjoy the diseased condition of life. They're seeking something else. Now you might say, but it's such a struggle seeking something else. It's hard. But what about the struggle to get material happiness, so-called material happiness? That you're willing to do. But that's something I can see, something I can feel, something I can get my hands onto. But the Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam that Lord Rishabdev is talking about, it seems so ethereal, so far away, so distant. Yes, this consciousness is brought about by modern so-called civilization, which deludes people into struggling so hard for something that's not worth it. And that's called the real world, normal life. If we ask someone, please, work hard for their Krishna consciousness? Oh, that's too difficult. Work hard for your sense gratification? That's normal. When you analyze all the affairs that go on in a materialistic home, it's all about the body. You want a widescreen TV so your eyes can be entertained by various sights, and your mind can be stimulated or slaughtered by what you're seeing on the screen. And you want all sorts of so-called good things for the tongue stocked in your refrigerator or pantry. Of course, actually, no one cooks these days, so generally you want some junk food, nice tasting junk food to rely upon. And then you go out to various fast food outlets to eat. Then that way your home becomes your castle for some sparshaja bhoga. And then of course you want some partner, as they say, to share the home with you and mutually indulge. And depending on how much financial means you have and how much you're into decor, you want, you know, a nice looking home. And not simply to satisfy your eyes, but you want to invite others, please come to my home. And so you can feel a buzz from their appreciation. Ooh. Is that the latest widescreen TV? Yeah. Look at that beautiful living room set. Or maybe the men like to show off their boy toys.
Come in my room and see my latest computer system.
Or look at the home entertainment system. You can generally tell easily flats where, you know, all men live. You know, it's dirty. Things are thrown everywhere. You know, beer cans strewn here and there, you know, empty packages of potato chips or this or that are just everywhere. It looks like a total dive. Just a junk heap. But the home entertainment system is first class. The computer system is just the best. That's what the men take pride in. And then they eventually settle into a temporarily committed sexual relationship. You know, their female partner, you know, kicks all the other guys out and cleans the place up. And so the man tolerates all that because, you know, he wants the benefits. Yeah, clean the place up, sure, I'll help you, yeah, right. I won't throw my dirty socks all over the place. Oh, yeah, sure. So then you might think, well, they'll just exist peacefully like that. But no, things cost money. Your material appetite's never satisfied. You have to get more, and that means working harder. Of course, these days, just to maintain is becoming so difficult. So there's so much stress and strain just about trying to maintain your present level. The fear is to fall back. You know, that anxiety to fall back in your material position. These days, people are so uptight, for many of them, it's not so much about getting ahead, it's about to stop from falling back. Falling back means a radical decrease in the potential for sense gratification. So Lord Rishabhdev is saying, why are you making the mistake of considering that kind of life to be human civilization? There's something else available. So let's again discuss this diseased state of life. How can you enjoy when you're sick? You have to convince yourself of this point. We discussed it last year, but it's always the eternal controversy. I always ask the question. When you're sick, especially let's say you have a cold or a raging fever and your head is clogged up and your sense of taste and smell is gone and you're coughing and sneezing and spitting out stuff and blowing your nose. But if there is a feast, you can't restrain yourself. Even though you're so sick. You can't taste anything, you can't smell anything, but you're just hoping, well, maybe at least if I just, my belly will be satisfied with that packed feeling. How many of you can resist when there's a big pizza ice cream feast? And there you are, having a real bad cold, bad fever. How many of you can resist? Raise your hands. A few ladies raise their hands, but very few men. So, the reason is that you want to enjoy. You feel it's your right to express that happiness quest that you always feel within you. But actually, those who understand health know that if you just restrain yourself from that artificial diseased happiness, because you can't really enjoy eating when you're so sick. If you can just restrain yourself, then you'll get healthy, and then you can experience, relatively speaking, a normal sense of happiness. Relatively speaking, as a material example. Of course, there's no real existence of material happiness. So, why do we make this mistake of trying to enjoy a diseased situation? It's because we do have that happiness propensity within us. The difficulty is that we're expressing it through matter. So on the one hand, there's something natural about your happiness indulgences. On the other hand, there's something totally unnatural. The natural thing is as spirit soul, part of Krishna, you are eternally, unlimitedly happy. But you're trying to express that now through the medium of matter, and that's where all the problems are. If you can get this firmly in your mind's eye, you save yourself so much trouble. If you can catch the trick that's going on. Because Maya is tricky by definition. Maya means that which is not. Material existence means you're going to be convinced of an hallucination. You're going to be so convinced you're going to accept it as real. It's the real thing. It's cheating. But we're so eagerly and voluntarily signing up for that cheating. Yes, cheat me. I'm self-authorized. I'm not going for all that body denial stuff and life negation. I'm here. I'm ready. I'm open. Isn't that the contemporary attitude? I mean, you may take a little bits and pieces from that ancient wisdom text, or another ancient wisdom text. You may take a little bit here from this spiritual teacher, a little bit there from that spiritual teacher, but be self-authorized. Make your own blend. And whatever you do, don't restrict yourself from the natural tendencies of the body. This is how the brainwashing that has gone through all of our heads. So, When you think about it, it's ludicrous to try to enjoy a diseased condition of life. And why do we rebel so much against anything that inhibits or restricts that process? As if it's against our self-interest. I was giving the example somewhere, I can't remember. So in February, I have to have dental surgery. So after this dental surgery, I can only eat liquid foods for 3 days, and then blended food for, I don't know, a few weeks. And then after that, only soft food. I don't know what all that means. I'll have to ask the dentist. So you might say, this is very austere. How can you undergo this? But what does the dentist say? The dentist says, just undergo this, he told me, and you'll be fine for another 25 years. Just undergo this little austerity, these restrictions, and then your mouth will be healed and Brahma Sokyam Twananta. Now, what would you do in those circumstances? Would you argue with the dentist? As a conditioned soul, yes, you would. You would argue with Krishna. When Krishna says, Dukkha Yona Evate, the samsparshaja bhoga, the happiness based on sense contact, is a source of misery. You'd argue with Krishna, but you wouldn't argue with the dentist. Please, yes. I want to enjoy life, all right. I'll undergo a little temporary restriction. Liquid food, sure, for 3 days, okay. Blended food for 2 weeks, okay. Where we take our bodies so seriously. But we don't take our spirit soul so seriously. So when we hear any kind of so-called restrictions meant for reviving our dormant spiritual identity, we protest. Because we don't take our spirit soul seriously. We take the body so seriously. We'll surrender to the dentist. Yes. The food for 3 days. But when Krishna asks us to accept the lifestyle for purifying ourselves, I can't live like that. I can't. This is our madness. So the dentist will tell you, if you don't have this treatment for your gums, you're not going to be able to eat properly. You're not going to be able to have a normal life. So just take a little care now, and everything will be fine. So we accept that. We take it serious. Okay, I agree, dentist. As long as my mouth has this problem, I won't be able to relish anything. I accept that. But when Krishna says that about your whole material existence, nope, you reject it. Can't be so. This is an extreme statement. Krishna is basically telling you the same thing as the dentist is telling you. Not simply your gums, your mouth have a problem, your whole bodily existence has a problem. You need treatment. And part of that treatment means to restrict for the purpose of having a better life. So once you accept that material existence is diseased, then you start to see properly. But if you can't get to that point, you're always going to have that rebellious tendency in you. You'll try to fashion kind of a double life. Okay, believe in Krishna, be theistic at the same time. Believe in the body and material happiness. Now, actually, you can do that for a while. Krishna's door is open to anyone, even those who come to him for fulfillment of material desires. But you're going to undergo the results of such a program. And so Krishna says, it's not very intelligent. Even you're coming to me for material desires. It's not so intelligent. But still, you're better than those who don't. By coming to Krishna, that means accepting Krishna's program for transforming the desires. Otherwise, you're not actually coming to Krishna. Now let's go back to what seems to be natural, the urges of the body. Why do these material urges seem to be so natural? Because they've been with us for so many births, in so many species, in so many forms of life, we've been expressing those urges. So what do you expect? Be practical. What do you expect? You're going to be feeling those urges. Understand why. It's because you've had countless lifetimes being attached to those urges in so many different forms of life. So the unusual thing is not that you're feeling the urges. The unusual thing is to try to check those urges. That program for checking the urges is the beginning of real human life. Without that program of checking the urges, you don't have human life. There has to be some toleration, just like when you're sick. You have to tolerate until you get well. But in your mind is a clear picture. I'll tolerate the doctor's regimen, and then I'll get well, and then... So why can't you have... What is that? Why can't we have the same mentality about Krishna's therapy? Why should we subconsciously resent Krishna's therapy? If we actually understand we're diseased, we're so enthusiastic to be cured. But if we don't understand that we're trying to enjoy a diseased state of life, we won't be enthusiastic about the cure. We won't have determination. So getting back to the state of so-called civilization today, it's based on a fantasy that material life is meant to be enjoyed. I was reading a purport in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita where Srila Prabhupada points out that this present civilization... See, we normally say that people are trying to enjoy the two modes of nature. Passion and ignorance. Forget about goodness. But actually, in these purports, Srila Prabhupada was saying that the mode of nature they're basically dealing with is the mode of ignorance. And he said, sometimes passion. So how can that be? You would think, well, yeah, it's all about passion, working hard, chasing the sense objects, conquering the sense objects. If you're ever in the entertainment district of a city on a Friday night, at the Bhakti Lounge, you can look out the window and see the packs of young men, you know, around 9 o'clock, you know, just going after. Passion. You see the people streaming home from their 5 or 6 o'clock from their work. They've worked hard during the week, and now it's time for passionate enjoyment. So you think, well, isn't that what it's all about? Passion. And some ignorance. But actually, why does Prabhupada point out it's all about ignorance with a little passion? And doesn't even mention goodness. Why mainly ignorance? Because no one can live without intoxication. The passion is actually fueled by ignorance, intoxication. forgetfulness. We pointed out before, you take away the mode of ignorance, the intoxication, and no one will be able to be passionate. They'll just go crazy in the mode of ignorance. So that's why. So Prabhupada was explaining that this present civilization is mainly in the mode of ignorance. Because of the mode of ignorance, basically intoxication, they're able to be passionate, but then they always have to get back to the ignorance, which provides the succor and the solace to be passionate. Even couples, after being passionate, they have to get into ignorance because that's just the ground zero is the mode of ignorance. It's not actually passion. It's the tamagun, the mode of ignorance that sustains the passion, that fills in the gaps, levels out the valleys, you know. There's even hope that the mode of ignorance will provide peaks, not simply level out the valleys. It's shocking when you think how much of life, material life today, depends on intoxication and mode of ignorance. And then, of course, what is everyone's ambition? Oh, to just sleep 12 hours. Again, the mode of ignorance. To sleep for 12 hours at some nice self-contained cottage or luxury place in Tahiti or Fiji, or sleep 12 hours and then wake up and get breakfast in bed. There you are with your temporarily committed person. The sun is streaming through the window. It's, you know, it's 12 noon. You know, you just pick up the phone, yeah, call room service. Please bring breakfast. And without even getting up, the two of you just have breakfast in bed. Oh, it doesn't get any better than that. I won't ask if anyone's done that. Of course, those from India might be saying, oh, this is pretty extreme. Oh, not anymore. You know the national pride in India. Whatever they've done in the West, we're going to do it better. Why just breakfast in bed? Lunch and dinner, too. And we won't pick up the phone in the room to call room service. You know, we'll need to use our smartphone. IG. You're from India. So, this most dangerous, perverse concept of happiness is covering the world. And the only significant protest is being done by Krishna's devotees. Mainstream religion has never got out of the bodily conception of life. That's the problem. And therefore, how can you understand truly that material existence is disease? So then what happens? You fall into the, whether it's mainstream religion or contemporary spirituality, you fall into the same trap of, well, let's just some or other try to enjoy what we've got the way we are. In the case of mainstream religion, you'll say, we'll do it with God's blessings. Or in the case of so-called contemporary spirituality, you say, to us to define what are the gateways to spiritual advancement. The universe has given us that liberty. So I hope now you can understand why your mind and intelligence is sometimes besieged by doubts. You might say, oh, they're philosophical doubts. Not really. You're feeling the pressure. The urges are, you know, working you over, pounding you. Are you really going to give us up? We, urges, have been with you for countless births. So many species of life, and now you want to turn your back? You want to turn your back on us? It's not natural. Get real. What are you trying to submit yourself to? Well, I can say the same thing to the dentist. This is unreal. 3 days of just liquids, a couple of weeks of blended food, and then soft food for a while. Come on, who can live like that? But no one will say that to a dentist or doctor. Very few will. And there's still people who are smoking cigarettes, even though they see horrible pictures of lungs that have been diseased. I think in some, is it, do they do that in New Zealand? Some countries, they have pictures of the lungs on the cigarette pack.
It's that a day.
Huh?
It's that a day.
And still people are buying, right? I knew of one famous singer and popular group back in the 60s and 70s. And so he had a beautiful voice, but he was just chain smoking ever since he was a kid. So when he was in his 50s, he went for an examination, and the doctors told him, you've got lung cancer. And he told the doctors, how can that be? I never felt anything. I was shocked. I never felt any symptoms.
Excuse me, you've been chain smoking for 40 years?
I never felt any problem. And now out of the blue they tell me I have lung cancer. I don't understand. He expressed his bewilderment to the media. I don't understand. I never felt any problem at all. And out of the blue, they say, I got lung cancer, I got 6 months to live. I don't understand.
She might say, well, you know, you're pretty dumb, unfortunately. Look at what you did.
But before we become proud and high and mighty, just think about what we say to Krishna. Maybe not out loud, or maybe subconsciously. Krishna says, dukkha yonaivate. Material happiness is a source of misery. No, I've been doing it for so long. And then, when the problems come, how did that happen? Oh, I can't believe it. That means there's no God, because I'm suffering. My sense gratification has been ruined, therefore there's no God. It's like saying, I'm ill. That means there's no doctors because I'm ill. How could I be ill? Maybe Mudacharya and Shrinacharya remember when we were in Keynes a few months ago in August, staying with a devotee doctor couple. And they were telling us what is the mentality of terminal patients that they deal with. And they said the mentality is mainly anger. What do you mean I'm a terminal patient? What do you mean I'm going to die? What's the use of this country and its medical system? What's the use of, you know, all the money I paid to the government? I'm dying? How can that be? Why didn't the medical system detect this earlier? They're just angry. They're blaming the system. How can this be happening to me? Well, it happens to everyone else, but to me, that means the government is at fault. They don't blame God because there's no, God. What normal person talks about God? So there's no, they don't even, this is Northern Queensland, God is surfing and beach culture. So they're fortunate in that they don't blame God, but in one sense, they're unfortunate because they have no conception of God, not even a materialistic Christian conception of God. So therefore, they have to get angry and they blame the government. What's wrong with this government? They haven't provided a medical system that will keep me alive. They didn't detect that I had cancer. They should have detected it long ago and done something about it. So they were telling me that's the main reaction. And because in Australia and New Zealand, religious culture, even materialistic religious culture, died 50 years ago, they don't take any recourse in anything theistic at all. Just anger. Why did this happen? And then the only other option is, well, doctor, just dope me up, drug me up so I don't feel a thing. Whether one is angry or passive, that's the end result. The doctors in your last stage of life just drug you to the max, so basically you're in a coma. That's considered mercy, because they can't do anything about it, so they just try to make it so you don't feel anything. Of course, they don't understand what really goes on in a coma. They just assume, because we don't see visible signs that the person is conscious, therefore we've taken to relieve their suffering. So once again, let us consider this basic issue. If we can frame it properly, and if you can deal with it, you save yourself so much trouble. Happiness derived from sense stimulation, particularly the sense of touch. The yogis reject that. Not because they want to suffer, but because they don't want to suffer. So Lord Rishabhdev is appealing to his sons. Don't accept this illusion and work so hard for it. It's not human life. So the bhakti yogis have a problem with so-called civilizations. We don't accept it as real civilization. People are being slaughtered. There's no sublime goal in life. People don't know what to do with themselves about anything except, let me just try to make my body and mind feel good now. So now, what you see now is not only is even materialistic religion long gone, but even the nuclear family is a thing of the past. Not simply in Australia or New Zealand, but even in the USA, which is considered a religious country, where 85% of the people say they believe in God and think they're going to heaven. So, even there, those Americans, always over the top. But anyway, so even there, family life is practically just disappearing. More children live in homes without both original parents than do. That's becoming the universal characteristic in all the developed world. So what are the social thinkers saying now? They're saying, look, let's face it, the nuclear family is dead. Let's get over it. The liberal social thinkers are saying like that. Look at the statistics. This is what's going on. Let's not live in la-la land. Let's deal with reality. This concept of mother and father and children is finished. You don't see it happening, except in a minority. Let's deal with the majority. Let's be for real. That is the way to benefit society. Look at what's happening, accept it, and deal with it. Why live in la-la land? Always talking about something that's extinct. Mommy and daddy and the children. It's not happening. You have partners, you have temporarily committed sexual relationships. That's the reality. So the idea is to figure out a way to raise children that is not dependent on parents. Because the parents aren't there. So why not just deal with that reality? That's what's going on now. This is the cutting edge of social thought. Women are going to have children from this one, that one, the other. And so how do we organize society based on that? They're admitting all the attempts at birth control and this and that. It hasn't changed the basic reality. Children are still being born in all kinds of circumstances. So why not just accept that? Doesn't it seem to be, if you were a materialistic thinker, doesn't that seem to be a logical way to think? Children are coming in so many circumstances. It's not about mommy and daddy at home. So let's just deal with that. Even some social thinkers were suggesting something that goes on in, they say, in Southwest China. That women and children live in enclaves and the women support each other emotionally in that way. And at 6 o'clock, the women can invite whatever man they want. And then they say goodbye, and what happens, happens. If there are children, it's the boy children who help take care of the other children. So this is actually being presented as a viable thing to consider. In other words, let's just face it. And they're thinking, well, in this part of Southwest China, they've got it organized. Yeah, they're dealing with reality. The women are liberated, they're free. Yeah. 6 o'clock, whoever they want. Come. Service him, and then goodbye. And if there's a child, well, the other women are there in the enclave to give support. And the boy children help take care of all the other children. So yeah, some social thinkers are thinking, this is practical. We should study this. I mean, we need to come up with other ways because we have to deal with reality. This is what's going on. So we have a lot of work to do on ourselves and for the benefit of others. And if we can cross this gap and accept that material happiness is a disease state. It's natural to want to express happiness because we are spirit soul, but that natural propensity is manifesting through matter. That's the problem. If you can catch that, you save yourself so much trouble.